So welcome everybody to today's episode of the Independent Teacher Podcast with me, Susan Pallister, and my very special guest, Tom Arbuthnot. Tom, welcome.
Hello.
Now, usually what I do right at the start of the show is just ask you to give a brief overview of your career up to the point of you joining Eton. So over to you.
So with pleasure. I mean, returning to Eton has been a slightly peculiar thing because I was here as a boy and then went off into some interesting political work. I ran a research programme at a left-leaning think tank in the early 2000s, mostly trying to thump the tub for Britain joining the euro. Then went into teaching, determined to teach in the state sector, and taught in a number of non-selective state schools, mostly in Birmingham, before I was lucky enough to have the chance to build a really wide-ranging and impactful partnership programme at King Edward School in Birmingham, where we developed training, CPD programmes, summer schools, competitions and all sorts, which over 190 schools in the end from the state sector from across the West Midlands engaged with. So at the time, it was I think, one of the biggest independent state school partnerships in the country, and we're very pleased to win an award for it. In the TESS Independent School of the Year Award back in 2015. But that was a very exciting thing, and that set me up for the work I'm now doing at Eton.
And so tell me about your role at Eton then.
So I'm Eton's very first Director of Outreach and Partnerships. But essentially my role is to oversee all the work that Eton does within the wider educational commonwealth. And that broadly has got three parts. Firstly, I oversee all our widening access programmes. So I look at bursaries and financial aid, both for entry at 16 and for entry at 13. And we have over 100 boys in the school who pay nothing at all, which we're very pleased about. The second thing I do is I oversee all our work with state sector partners. And we have two free schools that we founded or co-founded, one called Hollyport College, one called the LAE. And we work, as we'll come on to talk about, with over 1,000 state schools on different parts of that project. And the third thing is I oversee the volunteering work that the students do, both in terms of social action and in terms of environmental action.
Wow. Keeps you busy then, Tom?
Well, just a bit, yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you were an old Etonian. Now, what was it like going back as Director of Outreach, having been a pupil there?
I have to say, for the first year, I felt like a complete fraud. I sort of felt as though I was still my 13-year-old or 18-year-old self walking along among all these rather august and well-qualified beaks, particularly shrugging on my school dress. I mean, you can't see this on a podcast, but I'm wearing the full Eton regalia of a stiff white collar and a bow tie and Victorian schoolmaster's outfit. So no, the answer to your question, Susan, is right at the beginning, I absolutely felt like a fraud. What are they doing promoting this 18-year-old to be on the leadership team? But over the 5.5 years that I've spent there, I've got used to that. And the really exciting thing about being at Eton is that it's a school with a huge endowment and fantastic intellectual, social, network capital that can be expended within the educational commonwealth. And having the chance to really start doing that and thinking, if Eton engages fully with the wider educational world and really tries to make an impact, what's the best way of doing that? I'm sure lots of your correspondents on this podcast say this, but I really think I've got one of the best jobs in education.
Sounds marvellous. I mean, I used to think, probably used to think, when we were at King Edward's, there wasn't anywhere better that you could go to work. I mean, it's a brilliant environment to be in when you feel like that. Now, I know, Tom, that you do some really innovative work. I mean, you've touched on some of it there. I was going to ask you to talk about the Thames Valley Partnership, potentially EtonX. There may be other things that you want to tell our listeners about. So could you just talk about some of that work that you are doing in a bit more detail?
With great pleasure. So rather than come up with a massive answer in one go, which will be rather indigestible, I'll start by just talking about the Thames Valley Learning Partnership, if I could, and then feel free to prompt me about it next afterwards. So the Thames Valley Learning Partnership is develops from a network that Eton created in around 2005, so in the very, very early days of independent state school partnerships. And at the time, we had what was called an ISSP, which means Independent State School Partnership. And it involved a slightly heterogeneous collection of local state schools and Eton. It was mostly run from Eton, although all the schools in the network did bits and pieces. So it was generally chaired by us. And it did all sorts of really, really good work over a period of 10 or 15 years. But it didn't really have the structures to be there in perpetuity or to be there in the long term. So 2 or 3 years ago, we tweaked the structure a bit and we turned it into something which is properly collaborative and reciprocal. It's all about trying to extract the magic that happens when you take teachers and students from different educational backgrounds and you put them together. So it's now a network of 8 schools. It's 2 independent schools and 6 non-selective state schools. And each of those schools pays a subscription fee of just over £2,000 a year. With that subscription fee, we're able to employ a coordinator who works for the network. She doesn't work for any of the specific schools within the network. She works for the network itself. And the entirety of her job is to try and make the network work in terms of sharing expertise between teachers and students. And you know, she's an absolute force of nature. She runs a whole series of competitions and speaker meetings and CPD sessions. There's a CPD session this week on LGBTQ+. There's a speaker meeting on SEN and working with students with different needs. There's a history network, there's a music network, and we do all sorts of stuff around environmentalism. And it's a really, really successful model. And mostly, I would say, because of its reciprocity. It is not an independent school organising events for a network, or indeed a state school organising events for a network. It is defined and designed from the very, very bottom up as a mutual and reciprocal network, which is all about the teachers and the students in those schools. And it's wonderful, it's flourishing.
And is that a model that you're wanting to take to other parts of the country, Tom?
Well, we don't want to, but we would absolutely support and help any school that did. I mean, I have to confess to the listeners of your podcast, Susan, that that actually I didn't invent this idea. We did actually take it from some existing networks of schools that were already very successful. So there's a fabulous network of independent state schools in York, which has been going on for many years, called the York ISSP. There's another one around about Canterbury called East Kent Schools Together. And you know, over the last 5 years, a group I co-founded called the Schools Together Group has brought coordinators of these kind of networks together to share best practice. So I'm afraid, slightly incorrigibly, I cribbed quite a lot of the design concepts from some of those other networks. But equally, they're equally incorrigible about cribbing ideas back from me as well. I think the more that we can do together and the more that we can learn from each other in terms of school partnerships, the better.
And are schools able to join that partnership then? Or is it now restricted that you've got as many as you can possibly take on?
The network is designed to be inclusive. In terms of schools across the Thames Valley who are able to join. Our restrictions are going to be the coordinator time, having defined this model, and geography, in that one of the reasons it works is that all the schools are geographically very close to each other.
Now, the other thing that I was very keen to find out more about was EtonX. So this is your online learning platform.
So EtonX is a fabulous product. It's a whole range of courses that are designed to bottle what it is we do, particularly in terms of character education and skills-based education, and to share it using an online classroom and digital means with as wide a cohort, as wide an audience of kids as possible. And it was designed very much as a kind of internationalist product, which would be available at a cost to international schools of all kinds. As it so happened, when the pandemic hit, we realised that we had this fantastic product. And as the world was turning from physical classrooms to digital learning, and we took the decision then in March, April 2020, that we were going to take this product, we were going to take EatonX, and we were going to make it available for free in its self-study incarnation to every single state school in the country. And in early May that year, we were very pleased to make that offer. We retooled our admissions team, who weren't doing very much admissions during that early phase of the pandemic, to be able to do some of the logistics underpinning it. And they were very pleased during the course of that, you know, that intense phase of the lockdown, that over 50,000 kids nationally from the state sector did need EatonX calls from over 1,000 schools. So when I say blithely that we have a partnership network of 1,000 schools, I can substantiate that with fact, in that children from 1,000 schools did need EatonX calls. And we were delighted towards the end of that project to be looking at Twitter and seeing children from across the country really thrilled to have got their EatonX concluding certificate, and they were posting it up on Twitter saying, I've done this, I've achieved it, I've finished this, I've got this qualification. And that was very exciting for us.
And it's still there now, is it? Is it still freely available to state schools?
It is. The demand has gone down, as you might expect, as we and as the world has gone back to in-person learning. And you know, I'm sure most of your listeners, just as we are really focused on making classroom-based work happen. Any school that's still keen from the state sector, I'd encourage them to get in touch with me and we'll make it happen.
Yeah, brilliant. I'll put all the links that we need in the show notes, Tom. So, right. Yeah, it's great. And you can actually access those if you're in the independent sector, but you do, there's a subscription, isn't there?
There is. So I'm afraid from the independent sector, you have to pay, but the cost is very reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll bring a lot to any kind of sort of character skills, character education program. But it does come at a cost, I'm afraid.
And I think the other thing we probably need to just briefly go back to and mention is Schools Together.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah.
So Schools Together is a group that basically aims to build on and capitalise on, as I say, the magic when people working in partnerships come together. As you know, Susan, when you and I worked together at King Edward's, I spent 5 years building up the partnership or the outreach program at King Edward's, hugely successful program, but there was very, very little follow through. There was very, very little coordination with other networks and other partnerships professionals, even though at the same time, across many, many other independent schools and networks, there were directors of outreach or directors of partnership being appointed. But there was no space, there was no place where people could get together, and particularly those people who'd just be appointed to this new role quite often thought, well, where do I go for advice? Where do I go for help to enable me to refine and define my programme? Because, of course, as we know, every school is in a different context and every programme is going to be in a different context. It's not like that you can take a single model and spread it throughout every region of the country. So in 2015, I co-founded with a couple of colleagues from Highgate, from King's Canterbury, co-founded a group called the Schools Together Group, working with the Independent Schools Council's Schools Together website, although we were distinct from it. We were very, very keen to be a cross-sector group rather than an independent sector group. And we started organising conferences. The first conference was here at Eton in 2017. And we started producing publications. We produced a publication on music partnerships. We've produced a publication on how different partnerships are preparing children, particularly more disadvantaged children, for top tier universities. We've organised a whole set of seminars and workshops and so on and so forth. And so there's now a really vibrant network of partnerships professionals who can access a whole set of different ideas about how they can move their own partnership programme on. And again, anyone who wants to know more, or anyone who'd like to join the network, or anyone who'd like to access either of those publications, I'd encourage them to get in touch with me. I'd be only too pleased to help refer them to the right place.
I think it's true to say, I mean, it's coming out through our conversation, that partnerships with schools, outreach work, has really been the bedrock of your career, hasn't it? You're completely passionate about it. So the question is, why do you think outreach partnership work is so important?
Well, it's because we are all better when we work together. I think any school of any type is enriched by working with schools of different types. I think if we worked an education system where schools of different type or independent sector schools or state sector schools pulled up the drawbridge and said, well, I don't want to work with them, I think that would be a vastly diminished education system. And of course, nationally, we face some enormous challenges as an educational ecosystem or an education commonwealth. We face challenges in terms of social mobility. We face challenges in terms of access to all sorts of important things. We face all sorts of common challenges. I've always believed strongly that we are much better off facing those challenges together. Now, in order to do that, you need partnership structures, particularly across state schools and independent schools. You know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago, it was referred to as a Berlin Wall between independent and state sector. We've been doing quite a lot to break those Berlin walls down, but I think the necessity of doing so, if we are going to tackle the country's most deep-seated educational problems, we are so much better doing it together than apart. And I think most of the structures I've spent my career building are structures which enable us to do that, which enable us to tackle those problems together.
So I'm going to come on to this question now that always used to irritate me so much when I worked in the independent sector. There is so much misinformation, isn't there, about the work that we do. Why is that, Tom? Why do you think there's so much what we see as misinformation?
Well, I think we've been learning how to do really effective partnership. And certainly in my 10 years working in that area, I think we've got better and better at it. And broadly, I'd measure the success of a partnership against four criteria. I'd say a really good partnership has to be sustainable. It has to be there for the long term. It has to be mutual. So it has to be for both independent and state sector schools to benefit from. It has to be impactful, and it has to really focus on measuring its impact rather than just saying, we're doing it, aren't we great, look at us. And finally, it has to target disadvantage. It has to really be looking to solve a problem within the educational system. Now, I think that we as independent schools, I think we've got much, much better in the last decade at being part of conversations that do those kind of things. But I think there has perhaps been a tendency at times in the past to clap ourselves on the back for doing some things which are good, but perhaps not great. I also think that the track record of success is only just beginning to be built up now. So just like with all new parts of school life, it takes a while to get off the ground. And I think the best way of tackling misinformation is to devise really, really outstanding projects which make a big difference to the life of children. And at that point, we can start talking about it. And at that point, people will see that this is something well worth doing.
And do you have a PR department at Eton to try and go out and do that then?
Well, we don't, because actually we don't see that PR is necessarily what we're trying to achieve here. I think the benefits of partnership work are often better measured privately. And at the end of the day, if we went out with our PR department saying, oh, we're so brilliant, look at what we're doing, then people would see that as PR rather than as genuine educational impact. I much prefer it when our partners, who we're working with in different ways, go out and say, it is so brilliant working with Eton because we achieved such and such a thing with our kids. And when that happens, it's brilliant. But it's not something we try and place. It's certainly not something we try and puff up. If it happens, it's brilliant. But the reward for doing really good partnership work lies in the impact it makes on children and indeed teachers.
Good. Other thing I wanted to ask you about was your pamphlet, the Missing 2000. Can you say something about that, Tom?
With pleasure. So this is a pamphlet that I co-edited with my friend Anushka Chakravarti, who at the time was assistant head at the London Academy of Excellence, one of our closest partner schools. And Anushka and I were putting our heads together, trying to think about new ways in which we could pool some of this partnership's expertise. And LAE, for those that don't know it, it's a state-selected sixth-form college that does an extraordinary job of taking children from disadvantaged backgrounds and getting them into top-tier universities. And it's co-partnered with six independent schools, of which we're one. And it's a tremendous organization. And Anushka and I decided that what we would try to do, we were doing bits and pieces to try and support those kids from diverse backgrounds to apply to get into top tier universities, top tier courses like medicine, dentistry, veterinary. Yeah. But we could see that she and I, we only knew part of the solution. We also knew that across the system as a whole, there was lots and lots of really outstanding practice. And if we could just record that practice and put it in one place, it may be that a whole load of people could learn something valuable from it. So we collated a whole set of interventions done by different partnerships, different schools, state and independent, to support this. And they ranged from interventions at Key Stage 2 at primary, through interventions to Key Stage 3, to interventions post 16, to careers fairs, to interview support, to academic test support, to academic enrichment. You know, the whole kind of sort of panoply of educational success. And different partnerships across the country were doing different things. And so we organized a pamphlet around these very, very short gobbets case studies that were designed to be very, very easy to absorb. So that if you're sitting there designing a partnership and you're thinking, right, I'm looking for a new idea to do some stuff with, I don't know, year nine students in my local partnership schools, then you could look at the publication. There it would be. There would be a set of ideas that you could take advantage of. And what we kind of sort of theorized during the course of doing this is, I mean, we talked a lot during this conversation about outreach and partnership. I think there's a key moment where a partnership moves from outreach to partnership, where what might start out perfectly legitimately and perfectly reasonably as a relatively uneven relationship between the independent school and the state school becomes much more focused on mutuality, becomes much, much more even. And to my mind, that happens at a point of co-design. It happens at a moment where the relationship is strong enough that a teacher from both sides or both sectors sits down together and says, let's design something together for the students in both our schools. And what the missing 2000 show is that when partnerships get to that point of co-design, then extraordinarily impactful interventions happen throughout the country in different regions, some digital, some real, in a real world. But the pamphlet seeks to record those really outstanding interventions.
And how did you come up with the title?
Well, the title came from a paper I was reading that tracked children's achievement from year six through to year 13. And it showed that particularly from less advantaged backgrounds, there were something like 2,000 kids every year who were achieving very well at primary, but who by the time they left school at the age of 18 were no longer achieving at that kind of level. And we theorized that these are kids who should be out there as credible and serious candidates for the very best universities and the very, very toughest courses to get into in the country. But somehow during the course of those 6 or 7 years, they've gone missing. And again, the interventions that we tried to record within this pamphlet were those that might, in some of those cases, perhaps have made a difference.
Brilliant. Do you have any more exciting plans for the future?
So we announced last summer, this is in summer 2021, that we, as Eton, had formed a really exciting new partnership with one of the country's most effective multi-academy trusts, a group called Star Academies, based in Blackburn, Lancashire. And we're going to do a whole range of things with Star. It's very, very much, you know, the independent sector and the best of the state sector coming together. And one of the things that we're intending to do is to found some more schools on the model of the London Academy of Excellence, but outside the Southeast and the Midlands and North. But I think there are going to be all sorts of follow-through effects from that partnership. And to my mind, it's really exciting because as the state sector has changed, one of the key ways in the last 5 years the state sector has changed is in the development of these multi-academy trusts, where often there is very, very significant partnership resource, which actually completely outweighs what we have in the independent sector. So these are organisations which are really based around the positive value of collaboration. And I think the big challenge for independent sector schools over the next 4 or 5 years is to develop the ambition and the scale that these top, these brilliant state sector organisations have, so that we can be equal partners in some of the ambitions they have to really change education, particularly in some of the places where something new is really needed. So I'm really excited about our partnership with STAR, and perhaps next time we speak, I can tell you more about what we've achieved.
Great. Now, this is the point in my programme, Tom, when I say we're almost at the end. I always have a special question for my guests. So yours is, what's the one question that you think I should have asked you but haven't?
Well, that depends what you're trying to achieve, Susan. If you're trying to get me to say things I shouldn't.
I'm not.
I suppose if you had asked me what's my favourite moment in 10 years of working on independent state sector partnerships, on a more anecdotal level, if you had asked me that question, what I'd have loved to have said is that
You can say it now.
I think there's a magic that happens when you bring together kids who are educated in different environments and different schools, and you get them talking about a question of mutual interest. And that might be the moral value of money, or it might be leadership, or it might be all sorts of different things. But I mean, all of us as teachers, we love that moment where the scales fall from kids' eyes. Happened a few times when I was teaching history, not very often, but I tell you, it happens an awful lot when you get kids talking to other kids. Particularly older students who are sixth form level. So we have a programme with the London Academy of Excellence, which is called the Eton LAE Leadership Institute. We get 30 kids from both schools who come together. It's an iterative programme, so they come together online and in person over a period of time. And they talk about questions of leadership. And I think some of my very, very favourite moments are when one of those conversations catches fire, and suddenly you get kids being really, really excited about talking to each other, making friendships, building experience, understanding what the 21st century world looks like. So I think those are my very, very favourite moments working in partnerships.
I think that's a really good way to end, Tom. So thank you ever so. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. It really has been a pleasure catching up with you, and hopefully we'll be talking to each other at some point in the future to find out what all those new plans are that you're busy setting up.
Thank you, Susan. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you ever so much. You have been listening to the Independent Teacher Podcast with me, your host, Susan Pallister, and today's special guest, Tom Arbuthnot.